Today I've got back Lucas Carson, who is Senior Vice President at Altomic. We spoke a few months back, but he enjoyed the conversation so much. He wanted to come back and talk about some specific things. Actually, some subjects that one I've written about quite a bit in the past and one I've written about only once but quite recently. And we wanted to have a little chat about containers and I guess containers kind of almost logical conclusion, serverless functions. I guess let's start with a little bit of history maybe. I mean, containers are not conceptually anything new. Do you have any kind of insights or knowledge about where they come from originally?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're hardly new. They've been around for decades. They just have not been nearly as popular. System administrators back in the BSD days were jailing things, and the jail concept in BSD is one of the predecessors to what eventually became containers. And, you know, the idea of just being able to have lightweight security containerization and not allowing processes access to different parts of the system is a very old concept.
Okay. And was there any period in the past where they sort of had a spike of popularity? Obviously not to the scale of what we've had in the past couple of years, but was there any a time in the heady days of the, I don't know, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s when everyone was going a bit crazy for them before, or not really?
No. they were not something that people went crazy over. They were something that were always kind of difficult to use, difficult to implement. BSD jails, I mean, it wasn't very hard to use them, but it certainly was not very easy to provision them the way that Docker did. Docker's genius was in taking this decades-old concept and making it API-driven and very, very easy to provision and manage and manage a bunch of them. So being able to do the file systems underneath them in a way that is declarative, so that you can state, here's how I want my container to look, and be able to spin it up quickly within seconds, have that container, or less than a second, have that container up and running, and provision the exact way that you wanted it to be. That used to be a process that could take quite a while when you were doing it by hand manually a few decades ago. So being able to declaratively create and manage your containers was really Docker's genius. And once the developer and sysadmin community kind of saw that, it was one of these floodgate moments where an old technology became cool again almost overnight. And you put it in the hands of developers and sysadmins, and they instantly get it. They instantly see the value, instantly see the potential. And it took off like one of the most amazing wildfires that we've ever seen in the developer community. The Docker project obviously is the most popular open source project in history, and that is really something really exciting and fascinating to watch. It explode in that popularity, and over the period of just a few short years, it went from something that people were just playing with to something that every developer in the world is trying to figure out, how do we incorporate this into our daily practice?
So
it's been really incredible.
Your work with Altomic, I mean, it has some DevOps elements to it. I mean, people can go back and listen to the specific interview. I'll put a link somewhere. I can't remember, a few months back. Sort of automation of various business processes, but one of those is services and DevOps. How long has the company existed? This is leading to another question, but how long has the company existed, or how long have you been with the company?
I've been with the company for a couple of years.
Okay.
So it's pretty new to me, but the company has been around for a couple of decades. It's been around a long time.
And I guess, I mean, I don't know if you can speak any more than outside your time frame, but with regards to client interest in using containers, or even wanting to ask you, like, do you use containers? What would you say is kind of a rough sort of percentage increase of interest over the past 2 to 3 years?
Well, I mean, it went from nearly zero interest to 100% interest. I mean,
all right, okay.
It's nearly impossible to find a developer or development group that isn't either trying to figure out how to use containers or already using them in some fashion. It may or it may not be in use in production environments. It's, for some people it is, for some it isn't. But at least playing with them and toying with them, it's 99.9%.
Okay. And I mean, actually, I would say a few years – I'm not sure if a few years ago, maybe 18 months to 2 years ago – it was definitely one of those technologies that everyone was experimenting with. And then suddenly, as far as we're aware, there were a lot more actually being actively used and in production. But I guess before we get into kind of the trends and what's next, let's ask the pragmatic question. Are there any times when you don't need containers and actually using them is probably complicating things? Or is it really kind of a use case all the time? Most of the time, anyway.
Well, I mean, obviously, containers thrive in stateless situations. Mm. So it's always been a struggle to put things like a database into a container because containers are intended to be ephemeral. And of course, you can attach storage and stuff like that, but then you have to deal with more issues, more complications. It's just not natural. There are workarounds, there are solutions, but it's just not what it's intended for. It's intended for stateless applications, and that becomes very problematic when you're looking at things like enterprise applications that were built 20 years ago that were built stateful. And people are thinking, okay, well, we have to adopt containers, so we'll just stick our COBOL applications into a container. It doesn't really work that way. You can't just rip and replace old stuff, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I think my main first sort of interaction with containers was actually doing developer relations work for a database company that was making a database that would work better within containers. And at the time, they were one of the first to be doing it. And now a lot more are doing it. So so it was definitely always the initial problem. And it wasn't necessarily a problem that got solved. You just kind of distributed the problem. But anyway, that's okay. So in terms of containers, I mean, well, I guess the sort of biggest news of the past year has probably been really kind of nailing and getting tooling around container orchestration that works. There's also obviously sort of two main players and then a couple of smaller players. So the two main ones would be Kubernetes and Mesos. And then you kind of have the simpler options like Docker's own Swarm and a whole bunch of other kind of commercial options. But do you have any opinions or observations on those platforms, frameworks, projects, whatever you want to call them, over the past year?
I think that a ton of the headwind is going towards Kubernetes. I think that if you look at things like Kubernetes and Mesos, and you look at kind of the history of Blue Ray versus the other competing technologies, I think that Kubernetes is definitely the Blue Ray of the bunch, and it's becoming more and more clear that that's the case. Not that things like Mesos are inferior. I think that Mesos definitely had a head start and is much more mature in some ways. But I think that in terms of popularity, in terms of adoption, I think Kubernetes is pulling ahead very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that I don't know if you were going to bring it up, but I was going to bring it up, is one of my predictions last year for this year was that I got last year's prediction totally wrong.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, okay.
Last year I had made a prediction that Docker adoption was inherently flawed and going to stall out and kind of have significant problems.
So I should just hang up this call now, really.
Yeah, because, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
what was that?
I should just hang up this call now, really, because, you know, why should I trust anything you say?
I think that's fair enough. Because fundamentally, and I still believe this is true, is that the approach of stateless application development is a huge paradigm shift for so many people out there. And being able to move from stateful monolithic applications into stateless distributed microservices is a huge, huge problem that is not going to be easily solved. And a lot of problems arise from it, being able to successfully test systems that are distributed and stateless is much more difficult than testing a stateful monolithic application. And so I saw the challenges that containers posed, and I assumed, okay, there's people, once they actually stop experimenting and try to actually put this in production, they're going to see that they have way more trouble than they expected. Which fundamentally, I believe that part of the equation is still true. I think it a huge paradigm shift that people underappreciate the difficulty and challenges that they're going to face implementing this stuff.
Yeah.
What, in retrospect, I think I got wrong about my prediction is that I believe that there's a headwind that's even stronger than the challenges that containers technically bring. So the headwind that is pushing, in my opinion, container adoption even faster and further than anyone expected, including myself, is that every single day it seems that there is more and more mandates to move enterprise into the cloud. Seems like these mandates are coming from investors, from executives, CEOs, and they seem, you know, just overwhelming from the top down. We're going to move to the cloud. We're going to move 90% of our stuff to the cloud. We're going to get rid of, you know, half of our data centers. We're going to, all these mandates, they are just increasing. And the mandates come from not necessarily the most technical of the people involved, but they're handed down to the technical people. So, you know, they might be thinking that if we move to the cloud, it'll help OpEx versus CapEx, that equation. And so these mandates come from kind of a business perspective and are handed to the technology people who are supposed to implement this kind of stuff. And so when they're handed these mandates, they say, okay, where do I even go from here? What do I do? How do I execute on these ideas? And right now, the hottest topic, obviously, in technology right now is containers. Yeah. So containers, I think, are getting a huge headwind from executive mandates on cloud adoption. I think that the promise of containers is that you bundle things up into containers, and then they can move to the cloud. They can move between data centers. Everything's easier. And so people hear that promise and it kind of, it resonates with kind of the mandates that are going on. So I think that,
That's actually a nice way of putting it. Like, there's often been this problem in trying to explain why a container is useful to a non-developer. I mean, anyone who remembers developing like in the past 10 years knows the irritation of setting up a machine and works on my machine, et cetera, and can see why a container is useful. But trying to explain why it's useful to someone who hasn't experienced that pain has often been hard to explain. That'll do. But actually that quote you just said there about it enables you to move between infrastructures more easily. I mean, obviously it's actually exactly the same as what I just described, but it makes it more understandable to other people as well. Someone doesn't have to understand what developing is like to understand that they might want to move between infrastructure at some point. So, that's actually a good point. Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Yep.
Go ahead.
No, please carry on. No. I was going to, please carry on.
Well, there's another interesting, part of these executive mandates that I think is, really, really surprising to myself. Mm. A little background about myself is that I was a computer programmer for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I started a startup for computer programmers. Mm-hmm. It was a platform as a service that was based on Cloud Foundry technology.
Yeah.
We signed up over 100,000 developers and deployed over 100,000 applications on our platform. Mm. And we used a lot of container technology in doing that. Mm. And one of the things that at my startup we would always be explaining to people is that one of the big benefits of platform as a service is lack of vendor lock-in. Mm, because we're abstracting away the cloud infrastructure to the point where you could move an application between Amazon and Rackspace and Google Cloud with a click of a button, because infrastructure being abstracted means that the application workloads can just hop in between these different infrastructure underlying platforms. So vendor lock-in was something that we were very gung-ho about. And it seems like these days every vendor out there is talking about the benefits of avoiding vendor lock-in and how you should avoid vendor lock-in and how vendor lock-in is such a bad thing. And so I come from that background and I understand that that message very well, very intimately. But something that I'm finding very surprising while talking to larger enterprise customers is that a lot of them are less afraid of vendor lock-in than you would expect. And
vendor lock-in can make life easy. Vendor lock-in can make life easier sometimes, I suppose. You just until there's a problem,
it
of course.
It can make life easier.
Yeah,
and theoretically, it's scary because you're locking yourself into a platform that could have problems, could have bugs, could have a security flaw, could be more expensive. They could raise rates on you, and if you're locked in, you have no choice. And so, to me, technologically, vendor lock-in is a nightmare.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is that nightmare is not a nightmare for the actual people implementing technology today.
Yep.
It's much more of a nightmare that is made up by Silicon Valley that doesn't actually resonate with the majority of Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies out there. Mm. The Fortune 1000 are actually far more willing to be locked in if there is value to being locked in, speed to market, functionality, features within the cloud environment. A lot of these people, they, instead of thinking, well, I'm afraid to get locked into Amazon because what if they go down or what if they raise their rates? They instead are, their mental equations are going, well, if I go with Amazon, then I can take advantage of Lambda and serverless and S3 and these, all these different kinds of functionalities. And sure, I get it. They'll lock me in and I can't get them other places, but do I really want to build them myself? And so in their build versus buy thinking, a lot of these larger enterprises are actually leaning more towards it's okay to get locked in because of the those services are things that we don't want to build ourselves. And to somebody, go ahead.
No, please.
No, to somebody that is coming at it from a purely technical perspective, vendor lock-in is a horrible idea. From somebody coming from it from a more practical, pragmatic, I need to get this done by the end of the quarter perspective, vendor lock-in is not nearly as scary as one might believe if you read all the marketing material out there.
And of course, there is the possibility of getting vendor locked in to mostly to Docker itself, but it may be an open source thing, but it's still a vendor of some description, even though there are other options available.
I think that the vendor lock-in that I think people are more afraid of is more around the infrastructure than the software implementation, because having software vendors that can work across different infrastructure that can work on premise in a data center and on all the clouds, on Google, on Amazon, you know, that has, even if the software is locks you into their way of thinking, it gives you more flexibility to move to cheaper, faster, better solutions. So for example, if you're doing Cloud Foundry, you can have Cloud Foundry on Amazon. You can have Cloud Foundry on Google. You can have it in your own data center. Does it lock you into Cloud Foundry? Yeah, but it gives you more flexibility. Whereas if you commit to Amazon Lambda, then you know there's not really the flexibility to be moving off without major changes.
You kind of gave my own, used my own segue. I was going to kind of make this segue myself, and you made it for me, which was moving on to serverless. Which actually, first and foremost, I would be interested to hear your perspective on. We started with looking at whether containers were anything new. Serverless is a sort of new word, but I'm actually also wondering conceptually, is it anything new as well?
I think that conceptually it certainly is new.
Okay.
I think that it is a logical segue to the next step from containers themselves. When I look at kind of the traditional monoliths migrating into a platform as a service, and in the platform as a service, you're still writing code for the entire server. The whole application is contained within the platform as a service, but the platform as a service makes a lot of choices for you. So, for example, you can't choose load balancers when you're in a platform as a service. You have to use the load balancer that is provided for you. So you don't have a lot of choice when it comes to platform as a service. You have to fit your cookie into their mold. So platform as a service made things easier, made it less difficult to manage and run applications, but it then also took away some options. And it was great for simple applications, perfect for applications that didn't have a lot of complexity to them, where you didn't have to worry about, you know, what the load balancer was, or having multiple different components all interacting with each other. But if you're building a blog, a platform as a service is a great system because you don't want to have to deal with a lot of the default choices are just fine enough. But when you're trying to take that into complex applications, it's very difficult to kind of work backwards and try to put a complex application into a platform as a service because there's not a lot of choice in the a lot of the choices are made for you in how the application is built out. So I think that that's where containers came, picked up the concepts of platform as a service, but then gave you the flexibility because with containers, you could put whatever you wanted inside the containers. And it kind of created a division where developers could work within the containers and system administrators could administer the containers themselves and not worry about what was going on inside of them somewhat. And so it kind of allowed separation of the running and the building of the application. And I think that that made a lot of sense, especially for more complex applications that couldn't fit into the mold of platform as a service. And serverless takes it to kind of the next logical step in some ways, and just takes snippets of code themselves and runs them. It's almost a combination of containers with platform as a service because with serverless, you're going back to the idea that you don't have a lot of control over a lot of the execution process of the application, which is a very PaaS-y way of thinking. With serverless, you write a snippet of code and the service framework will put it into a container for you. And you can still define the container, but there is kind of a layer of abstraction there, which allows you to kind of, it's kind of the perfect marriage of the concepts of platform as a service with the concepts of containers.
And it's actually, I mean, it's a concept that is a little newer to me and sort of feeding into the world that you mentioned that some people also call it FAS, function as a service, which I don't know, serverless sounds slightly better. But at the moment, I guess the interesting thing about it is you're right, you alluded it to earlier, which is how we started this segue, was that the lock-in is actually somewhat bigger at the moment. Because most of the better options tend to be only by the sort of three main cloud providers. There's a couple of open frameworks, again, basically that let you either switch between different providers or do it yourself, which then starts to somewhat defeat the point. If you have to set it up yourself and set up a server, then you might as well just not bother really, because that was kind of what you wanted to avoid. Although I think it is a slightly different paradigm, but and I think they're still relatively early days in this space. Like I think even with Lambda, they've only just started adding like the ability to use more of an IDE-like environment, the ability not to have to up until sort of the past 6 months, you just had to literally paste code into a text box, which is not a very not a way that most developers would like to work. And so sort of tooling around the whole space has only really just improved. It's probably where containers were a year to 18 months ago. So, I mean, in terms of usage, do you know or do you have any experience of people using serverless much in production yet, or are they still mostly experimenting?
I'd say that the majority of the production use in serverless is still early days, smaller, you know, onesies, twosies, smaller applications that aren't mission critical within a Fortune 1000. I think that we're still in the kind of early adopter days of serverless. But I do think that there's the concepts behind serverless is really just updating the concepts behind platform as a service. And so I think that value proposition is very strong. Yeah. It makes sense. So I think that I believe it's an inevitable trend. It's something that it's in early days, early adopter days, but is certainly inevitable. As it matures. You know, today it's still difficult to put complex applications within serverless. For example, in Lambda, you can't have execution times going over a certain threshold. And so limitations like that show how early it is right now, but that doesn't mean that those limitations are going to be there forever as more serverless options come.
Of course not. And actually, I mean, before we move on to what you see is happening in the next 6 months to a year, what do you see as sort of obvious use cases for serverless at the moment and moving forwards? Where is it going to be useful, or what aspects of an application is it going to be useful?
Well, I think that as microservices become more and more understood and adopted, I think that microservices is where serverless is best suited. When you're trying to decompose large applications into smaller components that talk through APIs, that is a concept that lends itself extremely well to the serverless movement. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things, you know, as easy as it is to use Docker, one of the downsides of using raw Docker as a everyday programmer is that, you know, you went from platform as a service, which gave you no flexibility, to containers, which gave you complete flexibility, but then it gave you the headache because you're still responsible for building those containers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're still responsible for running them and figuring them out. So now at first that was cool because, you had more flexibility and containers are cool. But once you're doing it for a little while, you're going to get burnt out on having to configure Apache and tune the database to work in containers and do all kind of system administrator stuff that wasn't actually fun and you didn't want to do it. That's why you got into platform as a service in the first place, was to not do that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And you find yourself doing it all over again with containers.
But at least it's more easy to reproduce it, I suppose. But yeah.
Yeah, but it's still there. And so serverless combines the flexibility of containers with the promise of PaaS, which is, hey, I've got some code and I want to run it. I don't want to care about the, I don't want to tune Apache. I don't want to tune PHP and figure out how PHP best runs within my Docker environment. I just want it to run. Mentality is what serverless is all about.
So let's look forward slightly. Hopefully we'll have more success for you in a year's time. What would be your kind of, 1 to 3 major predictions for containers and serverless in the next year? Where do you think the adoption will go and the big changes that will really make them more or less desirable as an option?
I think that, again, as I stated before, the big thing that I missed last year was the cause effect of cloud mandates. Cloud mandates are increasing. They are extremely trendy. It's the corporate thing to do. Reducing data center footprints, moving into the cloud. You'd be incredibly surprised to hear some of the names of companies that are considering doing stuff in public cloud, locked in, vendor locked in environments. It's just that trend is really going to keep pushing things. And as they are pushed into, so that the one prediction there is that the cloud mandates are going to continue, which is going to continue pushing headwind into containers. Container adoption is going to keep growing, and I think that the longer container adoption is around, the stronger the serverless movement is going to become, because developers don't want to be configuring Apache and different kinds of systems. So I think that at first it's cool, but I think that serverless is going to become the ultimate solution for figuring out how to run microservices within an organization. I think that being able to understand how to decompose monolithic applications into microservices is going to become more and more prevalent. We're going to see that popping up. I think that one of the trends that Martin Fowler has identified, I've seen this myself, is that people who are trying to build applications from the ground up using microservices are not going to succeed. Hmm. People that building a microservices architecture from the start sounds like a great idea, but ends up in practice being much, much more difficult less successful than taking existing monolithic applications and decomposing them into microservices. I've seen that myself as well. And I think that's going to be another interesting trend is that the unsuccess of starting with microservices is going to be an interesting trend in the next year as well.
Hmm. And as a sort of final question, directly related to you and to Automic, how will these trends of these two platforms affect what you do in the next year as a company or personally?
Well, I think that the concept of containers allows for a separation between developers and execution of the application. It naturally lends itself towards developers working within the containers and administrators working outside of the containers. And as we talked about earlier, Kubernetes, Mesos, all these new orchestration technologies are really taking off and becoming more and more prevalent, which to me makes kind of the tools that run the orchestration that much more important. For so many years, people have had kind of a reaction towards the system administrators of the world that I don't think is well deserved. I think that system administrators have kind of never really received kind of the praise that developers have. Mm. Developers have kind of been the kingpins of the technology world, and system administrators are kind of the forgotten group that are in many ways getting marginalized. They're being shoved tools like Jenkins and Chef and Puppet and said, hey, figure this stuff out. This is your job now.
Yeah.
You know, but frankly, those tools were built by developers and for developers.
Yeah.
And they were not built. They're not great tools for running things like Kubernetes. They're not well suited for complex deployment processes.
Yeah.
They were suited for rapid development, prototyping. That's not the same concerns as putting stuff into production. on complex real world systems where you have thousands upon thousands of applications and thousands of servers. So I think that there's a increasing need to have modern tools for the modern system administrators, the modern IT operations people, to be able to run these things at scale in a way that is sustainable, manageable, and built for the needs of IT operations. So I think that companies like Atomic are really here to fill the gap between the explosive technology leaps that have been going on over the last 3 years, and how to run and manage those in production. Because the open source tools that are a cool name brand are great for running on your laptop. They are not great for managing clusters.
You surprised me. I couldn't imagine that would be No. I was about to try and make a joke and then lost the punchline. But I can't imagine why anyone would have ever thought that would have been the case. But yeah, I've had experiences of trying to demonstrate tools like that on a laptop, and it's also that way around a pain. It's hard to demonstrate things like Kubernetes or Mesos on a $2,000 laptop, because it's not really what it was meant for. Or you're just running Kubernetes to run like a WordPress installation, which is not really any point. It's sort of horses for courses, and the right tools for the right people and the right jobs. But I think actually you've probably you've put better one of predictions on our podcast that I did at the end of last year, which was around kind of consolidation of tooling and options on tooling and frameworks and things like that. It wasn't a prediction I necessarily thought would happen, but it's a prediction I would like to happen. And I think you've put it in a better way actually in this specific area, that just consolidating tooling to suit the people who use it as opposed to the people who made it, which we've done outside of developer tools for a long time. Well, we've tried to anyway. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. Just to sort of wrap up, we've mentioned you and the company a little bit, but just to very clearly state where people can find you and how to get in touch with you.
Yeah. I'm currently working at Atomic, Senior Vice President of Strategy, and it's pretty easy to find me if you just Google Lucas Carlson.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good year, and maybe we'll talk again in 365 days.